This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Well, if you had trouble keeping up with the news over the weekend, you are not alone. Democratic U.S. Senate candidate Cale Cunningham admitted to extramarital sexting, while his opponent, Republican incumbent Tom Tillis, tested positive for the coronavirus. And the state cautiously moved into Phase 3. Not in the top headlines are some of the competitive races for state Senate seats. Fortunately, WUNC Capital Bureau Chief Jeff Tiberi is here to talk with me about all of that. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, Frank.
And you can get more in-depth conversation from both sides of the aisle by tuning into his WUNC Politics podcast. So thanks for taking time out, and let us start with the headlines. Before we get to those very important state Senate races, Cale Cunningham admits to extramarital sexting on Friday. That's when the admission came out, and then got hit yesterday with another round of extramarital allegations in a right-wing publication. And the Senate candidate dropped out of a town hall forum that you were slated to moderate yesterday. How are voters responding to these allegations, Jeff?
You know, it's a really good and important question. And I think at this point, the dust has not settled, right? So we're waiting to see. And of course, this is all happening so quickly. We're 28 days away. We're 4 weeks away from election day itself. Hundreds of thousands of ballots have already come in. Early voting begins next week. And that is a moving target, the answer to that question that you just asked there. I would note that there was some polling done immediately after the first acknowledgement by Cunningham came over the weekend that he had these inappropriate texts with a woman who is not his wife. Some snap polling came from public policy polling, that is a left-leaning polling entity. And they basically laid out that this didn't have an immediate significant impact on the race. I would note, of course, that that's a snapshot in time, and that snapshot has now since passed us. So you mentioned there's another allegation that was on a conservative website yesterday. We have not heard from the Cunningham campaign. I have asked repeatedly for comment. I've texted Cale Cunningham directly, have not heard back from him. So how this plays out in the coming weeks, both how Tillis continues to attack the challenger, and we're presuming eventually how Cunningham tries to spin this, to acknowledge us and move forward. Those are going to be key elements in answering your question. But at this point, we have not heard from the Democratic candidate.
Well, one way he's not going to acknowledge it is in that town hall forum, but he's not the only politician to turn down a media appearance. Tom Tillis previously refused to join the forum that you were scheduled to moderate yesterday. Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest refused a WRAL debate, calling that station a fake news agency because the owner, Jim Goodman's history of donations to Democratic candidates. Jeff, is this rhetoric of partisan media reaching new levels in 2020?
I think it is reaching new levels in 2020. I'm skeptical of its effectiveness. Let's just tick off. Let's head to the gubernatorial race only briefly. According to polls, according to the conversations I'm having, Forrest is in a real predicament here, because the governor is ahead, is comfortably ahead, and by no fault of his own, Forrest's, the governor has received a lot of media attention here in the last few months as he has been regularly addressing the pandemic, right? So Dan Forrest needs attention. He needs media coverage. He needs different vehicles to get his message out. So a lot of the people I've talked to, people a lot smarter than me and who have been doing this for a lot longer, say that it's odd that he has handled some of these media opportunities the way in which he has. But back to your question, I do think that the vitriol, the media landscape has it's gotten worse, at least the relationship, the rhetoric toward the Fourth Estate. And, you know, part of that is, you know, starting at the top, we have a president who has used and utilized Twitter for years now. That is his mechanism to talk to the people. And I think at times, perhaps effectively in some instances, and perhaps to their own peril in others, we have lawmakers who are not utilizing broadcast and print media in the ways they have been historically.
Let's turn now to these Senate races of critical election year, the year 2020. Mm-hmm. The battle for the state Senate is heating up. Remind us what's at stake this year.
So fundamentally, one of the biggest prizes coming out of 2020, setting aside the presidential and the gubernatorial and the U.S. Senate race, is control of the legislature. And that's because the census, as you've heard, is taking place right now. And that means that next year, redistricting will take place. So whichever party controls the legislature is going to establish new political districts for both legislative maps as well as congressional races. And Republicans have control of the General Assembly. They've had that control since 2010. And focused on the state Senate here, it's a 50-seat chamber. Right now, it's a 29-21 split, Republicans with the advantage. So that's to say that Democrats need to net 5 seats. They need 26, or, and this is perhaps a little bit more of a long shot, they need to net 4 seats, which would make it a 25-25 chamber. And then the lieutenant governor, that's the role that Dan Forrest currently has, but he's vacating because, again, he's running for governor. The lieutenant governor could, in theory, become the most interesting person in state politics. So, A shift in the legislature would fundamentally transform the conversations that are happening about politics. It would fundamentally change the landscape of state politics. We'd be moving toward just different conversations about the expansion of Medicaid and different levels of funding for education and rolling back of certain initiatives that Republicans have put forth in recent years, changes to the tax code, expanding charter schools, so on and so forth. So what's at stake here is really the beginning of the next 10 years is maybe the most concise way to put it. And we have a really interesting Senate landscape. We've got a number of seats that are in play. And the way I've thought about it is that Democrats have a narrow and specific path to perhaps achieving a majority, but they have work to do, and they need to win in a number of different places across the state.
Well, let's talk about those things. Give us a breakdown then of sort of where the key races are and where you think Republicans and the Democrats are focused, where the Democrats think they have the best chance.
So, again, I mentioned it's a 29-21 chamber right now, and listeners may very well remember that about a year ago, the districts had to be redrawn because a panel of 3 state judges struck down dozens of legislative maps for violating the state constitution along partisan lines. So the new set of boundaries is widely seen as giving Democrats 2 additional seats, 1 in Wake County, 1 in Mecklenburg. So that effectively makes this a 27-23 map. And then there are a number of other seats that are either open or more competitive. One of those more competitive seats is a seat that's in Forsyth County, which is where Winston-Salem is, and also includes Davie County. And there's a longtime Republican incumbent in there, a woman named Joyce Kravick. This is a seat that has been very comfortably red for a number of election cycles, but because of that redraw, it's more competitive. So she's challenged by a woman, a Democrat named Terry LeGrand, and LeGrand has raised upwards of $500,000. And that's a race that Democrats simply have to have if they're going to get to 25 or 26 seats. So as we move east a little bit, there's an open seat in Alamance County. So Alamance is just west of Orange. There's a 5-term Republican senator. His name is Rick Gunn. He's retiring. And that's a race there. It's between a former member of the Air Force, J.D. Wooten, and a Republican named Amy Gailey. And, you know, and thinking about this conversation you and I were going to have, thinking about some of the issues that are coming up in that race, there aren't really a lot of issues that are front and center in that race. That has been very much a personal battle. The Republican has accused the Democrat of improperly using a VA-backed loan, a Veterans Affairs-backed loan, to buy a piece of property. He, in turn, has sued her for libel. So that's just to give you the flavor that has gotten very personal in Alamance County. But that race right there could be a potential tipping point. Whoever wins that race, that might signal that it's either Republican or Democratic control in the state Senate for the next 2 years. So those are a couple just to give you a sense of it. And one more I do want to note is down in New Hanover County. And one of the things that is important for Democrats as they're trying to expand the number of seats they have in the state Senate is also to play a little bit of defense. So 2 years ago, there was a Republican in New Hanover County, and he lost a race by just a couple of hundred votes to a Democratic challenger. That Democratic challenger is now the incumbent, and he is in a rematch with that Republican he defeated 2 years ago. So there's a close race in New Hanover County. There's a close race in Cumberland County where Fayetteville is. And Democrats feel good about these races, but the margins are very tight. And voter turnout is going to be key in a lot of these races, and specifically those two.
Let's talk about money. I've got a minute left, but I know money played an important part in giving the Republicans outside money, in helping the Republicans gain control 10 years ago. What's the role of outside money in 2020?
Wow, there's so much money, Frank. These, again, are seats that pay $13,900 a year. And we're going to see a number of races where the spending, the campaign spending for each major party candidate exceeds $1 million. There are national interests that have come in to support Republican and Democratic candidates. And kind of the X factor in this whole thing as we head down the stretch is the leader of the Senate, Republican Phil Berger. He is a very good fundraiser, and he is going to be able to dump $500,000, $250,000 into certain races here if they want to focus on mailers and focus on trying to bring home specific candidates from different regions across the state.
Jeff Tiberi, WUNC's Capital Bureau Chief and the host of the WUNC Politics Podcast, where you can head for more information about those tight races and much, much more in the state legislature. Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome, Frank.
You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.